when you can see how simple we are.
That's,
we don't have near the mixing board you do.
This is good. I like the fact that you've got this head splitter. It's not a headphone splitter. Cool.
Hi, this is DC McGannon.
And this is C. Michael McGannon. We are the authors of Charlie Sullivan and the Monster Hunters and of the new title, Chaos Subsidiary.
And we are listening to Comic Pop Library with you.
Another episode of Comic Pop Visits brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard, along with
Jonathan,
Jacob,
April,
and Logan.
And we are here today in studio visiting with Matt LaPointe. He is actually from LA, currently visiting family in our local area. And he works with the music industry in the advent with movies, TVs, gaming. So we're going to have fun with him this evening. And thank you, Matt, for agreeing to come in with us.
Thanks, guys. It's great to be here.
Thank you.
The piece we came in on was Big and Rich's, I assume, will be released sometime, Sweet Mary Jane, mm-hmm. that Matt mixed for them. So is that actually, because like I said, I tried finding a fuller version of that, and I couldn't find it anywhere. So is that on an upcoming album?
You might be able to find it on iTunes, potentially, or maybe Amazon. But it's basically an EP that this group put together. I think they're going to do a full length here soon. So just kind of a teaser, a short, you know, album, EP.
Okay.
And so two guys wrote the songs together. One plays guitar and one plays piano. And they wrote the lyrics, and one's a singer, and put together the tracks. They actually went to a studio in L.A. and cut the drums and the live bass and gave me the elements. And then I mixed. One little interesting thing about the drums real quick on this, they're live drums, but I also actually did sample replacement with the drums as well. It's a kind of a common technique on a lot of big albums where what you think you're hearing on big rock albums are obviously mixed with extra layers of samples and production to make them really snap.
Okay, so that's where you get the virtue of the recorded instead of live. You can actually do a lot more with recorded.
Because then you don't have five drum sets out.
That's right.
Well, Matt, Big and Rich, is this a different group calling themselves Big and Rich, or is this actually the country?
Oh, no, this is a smaller group. This isn't the big group.
So they just happen to have the same
name. Yeah, exactly. Okay. This is a different group of guys.
Well, they got a decent sounding
name. It's kind of a nice sound they have.
We'll have to try to keep our eye on for those and check out iTunes for them as well. One of the things I wanted to visit with you about is with April, she's getting ready to jump off and do her college track.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, she's into the music industry arena and is very interested in going out and possibly doing scores or within some type of capacity out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it like you're kind of her forebearer or whatever you want to call it. You come from the Lawrence area.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you develop your skills and then end up in L.A.?
Sure. I'll do the concise version.
There you go. Okay.
So, my parents, we moved to Lawrence when I was pretty young, like second grade, and I played in band, in orchestra, playing percussion, you know, timpani, and you know, studied privately as a percussionist and drummer, and my parents bought me a set, you know, so I was always playing in rock bands and playing jazz bands and concert bands, and then I got interested. My mom's a singer professionally. She's an actor and studied voice, I have three brothers, we're all interested in playing music, and so just, you know, played all the way through high school and college, and went to the University of Kansas. But early on, I met some friends who were into technology, and I was very interested early on in building a studio of my own. So I bought, back in those days, you know, four-track cassette players, microphones, compressors, you know, reverbs, EQs, different devices, different, you know, electronic things that I purchased for my own studio. I started recording my own songs, and I also started recording my friends', you know, in my own parents' basement. And I could charge them a little bit of money and start building more gear. And I started playing in bands in Kansas City, like to make money. I like everything from wedding bands, bar mitzvahs, you know, all sorts of different events. And so I kept building my studio. And one of the guys who founded the band had a beautiful studio in Lawrence. I started recording sessions at his studio. And Lawrence actually had Lawrence has had a pretty nice little music scene for quite some years. Okay. A lot of rock bands from Lawrence, yeah. And you know, there's bands all over the state. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of cool rock bands in Hayes and. Yeah. In Manhattan and, you know, Kansas City. But I went to a studio called Mercy Recording Studio, which was above the Bottleneck in Lawrence. If you've ever been to heard of the Bottleneck, is a pretty well-known club in Lawrence. But so I started recording bands from Topeka, like heavy metal bands. And one of the things I learned right off the bat, like all these different types of bands would come in, like country bands, rock bands, metal bands. You try to record, you know, them and really spend time to get try to match that sound. So when I was at KU, one of my professors was talking to me about computer recording technology. And this was, remember, back in the day, computers weren't very fast, but there were sequencers. In other words, if you hooked up a MIDI keyboard to a computer through a MIDI interface, you could record and playback multiple channels of audio over, you know, a computer. I was very interested in this, and I bought some software and started learning this software for sequencing. I started writing my own songs. And when I met my wife, she was a web designer for a publishing company that had an office in Los Angeles. Okay. So here we are in Lawrence. We're newly married. Actually, we spent a year in Minneapolis, but the bottom line is when we moved to Los Angeles, I already knew this recording software really well, the sequencing program, and I was playing instruments, and I had recorded and worked in recording studios. So when I arrived in Los Angeles, the thing I always tell young people coming up, if you have technical ability with recording, you can go to work. There's a lot of creative types in Los Angeles who don't really want to get their hands dirty. They don't want to really necessarily learn how to use the computers and set up recording studios and wire consoles and be able to run that type of equipment. That's not their thing. But they want to hire you to come into their studio. And you think about it, you start working in different studios, you get to know the guys, you start building relationships with them. And the next thing you know, they're asking them, hey, what are you working on right there? And you say, hey, I happen to mix. Well, hey, take a crack at this. Would you mind mixing this for me? Maybe I won't pay you at first. You mix it for them, and the next thing you know,
might make a little money here and there.
All of a sudden, they say, "Hey, we'd like to have you start mixing for us." And then once you start building credits, then other guys, you can start working for other people.
Start
and the next thing you know, so the bottom line is, you know, playing instruments, which you play, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then getting into the technology, because this, you know, and I was talking today to the new pastor. The technology is so important today, like. You know, the musicians have to know the technology. You just really have to. If you're a film composer, if you're an arranger, a copyist, you just have to know the technology. But don't be afraid of it. You'll pick it up really quickly. I mean, if you can understand music, if you can understand composition and orchestration,
that's easy.
That's the easy part, right? And I'm sure you've been around technology your whole life with your dad. So
I take great pride in being a very, very old soul in that sense. Outside, I mean, my go-to problem solver for anything is Control-Alt-Delete, because when I was younger, Logan showed me that, and that was literally, I was like, that's all I know now, okay, just crash everything hard.
But, that's great.
But yeah, it is one of my goals to get at least, yeah, enough to where I can understand and pick up better and everything, yeah.
Fantastic.
But, so this is one of those areas where it's a little bit better to go in this avenue than... Let's just hit the waitress and waiter avenue and it
hope,
might be a little bit
right.
more money in the long run than the waitressing and all that stuff. So,
right.
So I can see why you would want to do that. But you weren't into the acting part of it per se. You were into the music area. Mm-hmm. And I found it interesting when you were commenting about the song coming in, you're adding to these tracks as well. So you're actually, you know, most people think, well, mixing is just layering and making sure everything's sounding crisp, but you're actually contributing as well. And I think most people don't realize that a mixer would contribute that much.
You know, it's interesting. As a note, there wouldn't be an accident that most of the best score mixers and engineers in Los Angeles, the ones that are very successful, are always musicians, like concert violinists and stuff, because they're when I'm listening to music, when I'm mixing, even not necessarily orchestral music, but even rock, let's say, or blues or rock, you're really listening to the experience, and you're not just listening to the frequencies, you're listening to the energy. Does that make sense? Because one of the hardest things you have to learn when you work on as a mixer is the low and high frequency blends, mm-hmm. right? And being able to carve out the niche for all the different frequencies to fit together. And so you learn different techniques on equalization, using compression, EQ, limiters, and putting things in space, pushing things back with reverbs. You learn how to use all these different tools. And what's amazing is like something like this, right? It's all done. Even though I sometimes will get to use consoles, I mix that entirely in one computer at one time. I just have, you'll over time, you spend a little bit of money to get you know, excellent processing plugins, as they call them in my world. So I own, and because I work for the software company that makes a lot of these tools, I get to use all these products from different companies. They want me to use them. So I have my access to phenomenal, you know, sounding processing plugins to be able to apply to these sounds. And so I have the most important thing, you know, having a great room for mixing, having great speakers, right?
Right.
Having a good pair of headphones, although you really can't mix on headphones, right?
And he's headphones. Digging on this right now.
No, that's fine. So, yeah.
Got to dig, get the digs in.
Right.
No, these are actually Sennheisers that can make good, good phones.
Ours don't.
Yeah, no, they don't. The April curse.
The April curse.
Well, with the advent of the computer age, we are also getting into the gaming area.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to play a little bit of a sample from some of the mixing you've done. And you suggested this to us, and I was like, oh, that would fit perfectly. And we're going to play some of the samples from some of the Star Trek games you've been going through, since we have quite a few people that are into the Star Trek scene. Take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Bedlam. Well, the Bedlam's not on anymore.
Yeah. Star Trek Next Generation, I'm pretty sure, isn't on either. There's the wolf, vampire, and ghost roommate thing, which was different in...
Oh,
that's called Being Human.
Being human. Yeah.
There's a British and American version.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they're all different.
Yeah. Cool. Everything comes from Britain, and we do it.
It's not they have the version. We have their
version. Right. Yeah, you don't find the Brits ripping off the Americans, right?
No, you don't.
It's usually the other way around.
And as you can tell, we're back, and we were listening to some of the samples that Matt has on his website. It's mattlapointe.com. That's mattlapointe.com. And you can go there and do some of the samples yourself. We're not going to do all of them, but he has quite a few on there. But these were from some of the games entitled Starfleet Academy, Voyager Elite Force, and that last part was Voyager, the main title, if I remember correctly, if I remember all the tunes. And you mentioned there's also a sample from Encounter at Farpoint. So it's not just the games. You actually did the pilot, wasn't it, Jacob?
Encounter at Farpoint's the pilot.
For the next generation.
Next generation pilot.
And when we were talking before, let's do the video games first. Mm-hmm. Is there... A little bit of everything between the musicians, the video gaming, the movies and TVs. Is there a different feel for each area, or is it pretty much the same type of mixing that you're doing?
Well, that's an interesting question. Sure. Well, you know, it's interesting. Sometimes it's what you're working with that helps sort of guide how you're mixing the approach. Mm-hmm. In the case of the video games, and this is sort of the true of a lot of scores these days, which is I call them hybrid scores, where a composer gets hired to create a score, right? and they'll have to oftentimes mock up the score with samples. Okay, essentially they'll have obviously fast computers with lots of libraries, orchestral libraries. They'll have, you know, great sounding, well, I call them plastic, but great samples. You guys know what sample sampling technology is, right? It's for the listeners, real quick. Essentially, sample libraries have taken all the instruments in the orchestra and recorded their full range of the instruments at different, not only different ranges, but different articulations, right? So whether legato or short or pizzicato or staccato versions of those instruments, right? But a lot of different velocity ranges of those instruments or volumes. So now you've recorded, let's say, a trombone or a French horn playing all these different notes in the scale. Now I've recorded all these audio and edited them and mapped them across a keyboard. Now I've sold this to a composer. He's loaded into his computer. He's got fast hard drives. And I'm able to create an incredibly real-sounding orchestra with just a keyboard in my own studio. So a lot of, I mean, most of the television shows that you watch today are just sample libraries with guys who really know how to use them and have good ears. And sometimes there are certain instruments that you can't pull off. Like, for instance, if you're playing a beautiful solo violin, that's going to have so much variation, right, that you're not going to really be able to do it with sample. So, or like, let's say a guitar, something really articulate with a guitar or obviously a voice. So with this is, I would say, maybe 60% samples. And then what oftentimes happens is the composer will make a great sounding mock-up with samples. Then he'll bring in live, let's say, string players, and we'll do an afternoon in a studio with live string players. And then my job, what makes it a little bit more interesting and challenging, is to blend the live elements with the sampled instruments and try to put them in the same space and make them sound like they're very natural and real sounding. And I have different, real quick, you might find this interesting. Sorry if I'm going crazy here.
There's
something called impulse responses. Well, here's the idea. You'll appreciate it. There's a company in Amsterdam that goes into all the greatest halls, and let's say even like the Sydney Opera House. And they set up microphones and playback systems, and they'll sweep sine waves or very high and low pitch frequencies, and they'll record the acoustical footprint of some of the greatest halls in the world, and you can buy them, and you can put your orchestra in them, and they sound fantastic. So, for instance, I'm putting a lot of those orchestras in Disney Hall, which is in Los Angeles, which is a beautiful, very wooden, organic-sounding acoustical space. So I guess that was a long-winded way of saying, sometimes the far point was, you know, we talked about the pilot. Well, here's an interesting thing. That was recorded in 1988 in Los Angeles at Paramount Studios with all live players. There was about 45-piece orchestra, and in those days, you know, they were basically all playing live, right? Really fantastic session players, and they recorded it onto reel-to-reel, you know, 24-track tape machines, and basically they transferred those onto digital, and I was able to mix them off of the digital. They were analog, originally recorded on analog tape, so.
And since, you know, for games and TV and everything, so do you take different approaches to the mixing per request, per genre of what you're working on?
Yeah, that's true. Well, definitely take a little bit different approach. I mean, you know what's interesting? You try to make it sound, obviously, just as full and as natural and as sort of musical as you can. And oftentimes, since I have a musical background, when I'm mixing, I'm thinking as a conductor. That's kind of the best way to think of it, right? So you're listening to the recording and you go, where are the flutes? I can't hear the flutes. And so I can bump the flutes up just a little bit. I can hear them. Where's the harp? Where is the French horn? And you're trying to balance everybody. And not only are you dealing with level, right? You're dealing with the panning of where they lie in the orchestra, right? In terms of the left to right space.
Right.
And sometimes I mix and surround. And that doesn't happen very often. Usually, and I'll just clarify this, my job as the score mixer, I'd rarely deal with surround elements. Usually what happens on a film is I'll record the music and mix it, and I'll hand what are called stems, which are breakouts of the orchestra, to the dub mixer. And the dub mixer is the one that mixes the music with the sound effects and dialogue. So he takes all those different elements. He's in a theater, right? Literally, that's what a dub stage is. It's an empty theater that's all acoustically treated. Mm-hmm. And it's usually sort of like Dolby certified. Okay. And he plays back the recording and he mixes the dialogue and the sound effects and he puts the elements in surround.
So are you actually mixing just the music, or are you mixing everything?
99% of what I do is just the score. I don't usually deal with dialogue and sound effects. Once in a while, I just finished, in fact, at some point I could play you, I just finished some trailers for a company where I'm doing the dialogue and sound effects. But usually my specialty, I don't really book myself very much as someone who mixes, you know, dialogue and sound effects. That those are very, you know, we were talking about how there's so many interesting jobs in LA, right? Mm-hmm. Score mixers, you know, ADR, dialogue editors, sound effects editors, visual effects editors. I mean, there's so many. If you have an interest in it, there's just endless work. So,
but with the music end of it, you are mixing the artist's voice with their instruments, though, when you're actually working with a musician?
Exactly. When it's a band or a single artist and you're dealing with their voice, and it's interesting, you know, I have all, you know, the tools for doing pitch correction and all those kinds of things. Yeah, if need be. You know what's interesting? I mean, unfortunately, I think, you know, because think about all the recordings we grew up listening to where there was no pitch correction, where right. someone had just had to really have a great, strong voice and nail it. And now, unfortunately, a lot of people get, I would say, maybe
get
lazy.
Close enough.
Close enough, and then we pitch correct it. And it's kind of like, you know, it's unfortunate. There's so many sort of trickery in the studio, but unfortunately, yeah. That's the nature of the business.
Okay. With the... Oh, where's it going to go? I just lost my train of thought. Bloody...
Well, I have a
go
question
for it.
If you don't.
Go for it. I just lost it.
With that, so which do you find more enjoyable to mix, the bands and the voices and everything, or for games and TV where you kind of half and half?
That's interesting.
Splice.
You know what's interesting? I guess I'm lucky that I can do both, and I really think it's neat that once, you know, after you do something that's a score, it's just all instrumental, and you come back to something that's vocal, it's like, oh, you get to really, and sometimes it's really, you know, it's nice to have both, because I love film score music. Like, that really makes me happy. Like, when I listen to, like, John Williams, we were talking, mm-hmm. you know, and right. I know you guys are Star Wars fans, but, like, I can't, as somebody who grew up listening to film music, like, you can't overstate the importance of John Williams. Like, there's not enough wonderful adjectives to describe John Williams. I don't think of him as a film composer. I think of him as an important 20th century composer. Yeah. And he'll be thought of as a 20th century composer. He's that good. I mean, his work with the Boston Pops, his arranging, his arrangements are absurd.
He's literally noted in the history books as one of the best ones.
One of the greatest composers, not film composers. And a lot of people, you know, but I think it's interesting because in Los Angeles, you have all these people working, and you have all these phenomenal composers. And even in Los Angeles, where you have all this talent level, John Williams is still like heads above everybody else because that's how good he is.
Well, I think I heard one person comment, and I kind of agree with him, that the soundtracks of today is the classical music of yesteryear for us.
Right.
Because that's the only place you're hearing orchestral or symphony type music is in the soundtrack.
That's a really good point.
There's plenty of classical music being written. It's just...
You don't hear it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. The only really big social media form that you're going to hear it in is...
Is in film. Like John Cage. There are some like legit quote-unquote composers that are not film composers that mm-hmm. write a repertoire and do sort of more 20... It's an interesting question that I could go... If we ever wanted to waste some time and talk about where it left off with like... 20th century music, right, and where the current state is. But you're right, sort of romantic film scoring music is, and you know, we're talking about George Lucas, right? George Lucas said, and you guys know, with his contribution to sound, right, mm-hmm. with Skywalker sound and Industrial Light
THX
Magic
and THX,
he right. said that music was 50% of the theatrical experience, 50% of the theatrical experience. And I always think with John Williams in particular, and like my favorite example is E.T., right? You say, you watch E.T., you mute the audio, and you see these kids on a wonky bicycle kind of getting ready to take to elevate, and you're like, oh, that's a couple kids on a bicycle. Unmute it. Oh my, it goes from here to like infinitely yep. higher
the
because
mood
of the, John Williams creates that.
We were, one of my favorite film scores is Oblivion's.
Yep. Oh, sure.
And I mean, the movie was, but I like the music
the
in it. Yeah, like it's great. And we went to see that one in theater, actually, and I sat by my mom for it. And mm-hmm. at one of, I can't remember at what part, but at one of the climax parts, one of mm-hmm. the higher ends, I just lean over. I'm like, that French horn, oh my, because French horn's never like used very much, you know, and so it's like, ah, yes,
don't
the
you love
star,
that?
I love yeah. French horn.
Don't you love score? You know, it's funny, I love, well, I would say recent films that I absolutely just live for, which I love the Lord of the Rings films.
Yeah.
I feel like those films, like in terms of the scope of those films, like Peter Jackson, like that, those films are so epic, and the score, you know, I mean...
Mm-hmm.
Howard Shore. Those are, it's interesting. Howard Shore, I know I've worked with Ryan Shore, who's one of his nephews. And actually, it's interesting. We're talking about Danny Elfman. The guys that I've been lucky enough to, I never got to meet Jerry Goldsmith, which I really wanted to meet. You know, obviously a very important film composer. But, Howard Shore, there's just so many guys in Los Angeles. Hans Zimmer, a lot of people, it's interesting, I would say I don't think I'm the biggest Hans Zimmer fan, but I really respect his scores. I feel like The Dark Knight and some of those are just, or Inception. Those are really powerful scores. You know what's great? I guess real quick about Hans Zimmer. What I love about him, he's power. John Williams is very intricate and he's got all these inner voicings and all this contrapuntal type of writing, right? Whereas Hans is just smash you, just absolutely weight and power. And that's cool.
Yeah.
We're going to take a small break so you can kind of feel a little bit of that with the mix that Matt did with the Sherlock series. It's from the Eulogy from Series 1.
You a geek? That's a big fight too. If you want to open a can of worms, what's a geek and what's a nerd?
Well, a nerd is a nerd is somebody who stays to themselves and not leave the room or anything like that.
Maybe
a geek. No, I looked it
what
up.
What if they're bad at math?
A geek is an introvert. The social person.
More on.
So I would be classified as a nerd because I'm not really social.
And now everybody knows how Jonathan's classified. Well, you can tell we are. you can tell we just roll with it, Matt. So
that sounds good to me.
And as you can see, when Matt was talking about the emotion and the powerful impact with the Sherlock Eulogy, you can feel that within it because it was a heavier piece.
Well, and I need to mention, it's not. Stateside Sherlock, that's BBC Sherlock. Dad didn't believe me. We were on your side.
Well, there's several BBC Sherlocks, though. That's what I was commenting on.
Yeah.
Ours is called Elementary, not Sherlock.
Oh, I don't know. I don't watch that.
You're talking about Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock, probably. Yeah, we have both.
Yeah, we have both. We have
we have Robert Downey Jr.'s one. Yeah. You're right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Forgot about that. My bad.
This is true.
But So we're talking about the current BBC Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch in it. And so that would be considered an international project. So wouldn't it, since it's...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So so do you mix a lot for international companies or with that? Or is it easy to find those jobs and everything? Or how
Well, you know what's interesting on my end? It's a good question. On my end, I'll never really know what the distribution will be like for it. I mean, I might work on something and it may not ever even see the light of day. It might be a trailer and not even get picked up. And maybe I'll work on something that's a theme park ride. We were talking about maybe Dark Flight as an example, which I find really interesting when the guys that I work for, composers, get jobs doing theme park rides. What a cool idea. So, and obviously Dark Knight, couldn't be more popular. And a lot of the...
it is for me anyway.
And it's great. So for instance, what's interesting is they'll get a pretty unrendered version of the animation version, right? And it'll be for let's say a 12-minute ride. The kind of ride where you get in and how there's the 4D rides you've got mist and you've got the wind, you've got movement and obviously 3D images. And so what's interesting is they'll say, "Okay, Matt, we're going to mix this. Here's the score, but now here's the delivery. The delivery needs to be these specification in terms of the resolution of the files, but it also has to be two sub channels, right? Maybe a ceiling channel. There's different, and that it's interesting. I mean, not I don't know if it's interesting to your fans at all, but a lot of you guys know there's stereo and there's surround, traditional surround formats, which are 5.1 and 7.1, which is Blu-ray. But companies like Dolby have something called Atmos, which is something that I'll be getting into here soon. It's been starting to really develop, which is basically N channel basically up to as many channels as you want. So for instance, in Burbank, Dolby has a facility there where they have an Atmos system where you can sit down and they can have ceiling channels, side channels. You have 35 channels of submersive audio playback. So the future theatrical experience will be so amazing because you'll have audio coming from every direction. But what's amazing about Atmos is that if a person only has 11 channels, it knows how to sort of wrap itself down, and it knows how to basically expand and reduce based on the number of channels. So it's a really cool new technology that I'll be getting into, but that's kind of geek speak.
Oh, that's fine. That's what we're all about here. One of the things Michelle wanted us to say, since she was unable to be here, or ask you, Matt, was we had a young gentleman that had us listen to his music, and we commented he needed a good mixing board and everything. Mm-hmm. We're fairly simple. I use 5 channels. I'd have a few more, but we are small. But for a person just starting out, what's the best bang for your buck for a cheap budget?
What should they look for?
No, that's interesting. It's a good question, because I mean, if you have a decently fast PC or Mac, you can buy a program for not very much. It doesn't cost that much. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I think a lot of people, believe it or not, having a good microphone, and you don't have to spend a lot of money to get a decent microphone now. You can buy a condenser microphone, you know, from a company like, let's say, AKG, let's say as an example, for, you know, $200, you could buy a good microphone. And, you know, versus a dynamic mic, a condenser mic has a higher frequency support, you know, in terms of recording, and then you can have more SPL, more signal, louder signals. So I think, you know, and the other part of it is, if a young person's starting out, even if they can buy one decent microphone, one good condenser microphone for $200,
right,
and then acoustical treatment, like making sure, because whatever you're going to record, right, you're recording essentially the room that you're in. So as long as you can go into a room like this, let's say, and you can put up, even if you wanted to put up your own dampening, whether it's blankets or eggshell carton type foam.
I've heard of eggshells.
And really
now
try to reduce, because what you're trying to do is reduce the standing waves, right? You know how you walk into some places, you clap, and it echoes off?
Right.
Well, that's going to basically, here's what happens oftentimes with recordings. Oh, sorry, I'm off mic.
Yeah.
See, I'm off axis. That's a bad thing. I should know better. So basically what happens is that, like, if you're in a room like that that's not treated, you're actually potentially having phase cancellation. Mm. Right, so you're out, and then you're not getting a full frequency recording, and so you know, maybe just roll your own sort of acoustical treatment, decent microphone, right, and then, you know, make sure you don't distort the levels. You know, obviously get a good level that's not too hot, but compression and EQ is really important to be able to create the balance, and also a good pair of speakers. You know, as long as you don't have to spend a fortune. You know, it's what's amazing now is, you know, you could go into online, you could order, you know, even like JBL makes a really nice pair of entry level speakers that are powered, right? Mm-hmm. And plug them in. And I often tell people, you know, you can't really mix on headphones. You know, they're good as a reference, just like as a general idea, but you know, you can't really tell on a pair of headphones what's going on below like 100 hertz, 80 hertz. You're missing all of the energy, the low energy. You can't really gauge. So what happens is that you go and test your mix in the car, and it's muddy or it lacks bottom end. And so you really want to have a pair of speakers. So, but you don't have to spend very much. I mean, it's amazing how many great records are out there where a person may have spent just a few $100 and has a quality recording. It's amazing.
Is there a specific brand? Put you on the spot here.
You know, it's interesting. I guess I definitely should plug the company I work for,
there,
right?
You go.
So I should definitely plug this company, Motu, Mark of the Unicorn, which is based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. They're a company that makes software tools, and I work for them on the West Coast in Los Angeles. So they make a program called Digital Performer, and it's basically a very powerful, it's a sequencer and audio editing tool. So you can do editing, mixing, recording, automation. You can do everything with this tool, and it's cross-platform, Mac and Windows. And so it's not super cheap. You know, I'd say, like, if you were a student, you could get it for like $395, mm-hmm, but it's not very expensive relative to what it can do, right? So then here's the other part of it, right? Computer, audio recording program, audio interface, okay? So, you know, USB, or maybe, you know, there's other ways to connect PCI, depending on what kind of computer you have to record. We actually have new interfaces now that connect via Ethernet or AVB. So now we have networkable audio interfaces for a company that wants to have multiple machines on a network of interfaces. So anyway, it's very technical stuff, but you don't have to spend that much. That's the amazing thing. Remember, just treat the room and get a decent mic.
Okay.
And so with that, if you're slash musician and everything, so when you're a musician, you know, you go in, you want, you know, big open room, some wood, maybe, you know, get mm-hmm. some pockets and everything rounded. And do, is it the same acoustics that you want to mix with as well?
Or sometimes you don't have the luxury of a great room. Let's just be honest. Most people don't. A lot of people are working in an apartment or a basement or who knows where, right? So oftentimes I would rather tell somebody, you know what? Take all of the standing waves and get it just to get a, almost a dead sounding room. Not completely dead, but like very deadish sounding room, and record the clarinet and get a really nice tone. You know, and don't get too close to the microphone. You know, back off a ways, turn up the mic, and you don't want it to be noisy, but just get a nice level and play, give it a little bit of distance, and then just use really nice, you know, artificial ambience, you know, use reverb to get mm-hmm. to get the mix, unless you have access to like a really quiet, beautiful studio. Like, you know, it's interesting, like at Capitol Studios in Los mm-hmm. Angeles, one of the interesting things they have there, aside from these great rooms for orchestras to record, they have their own echo chambers.
Oh, cool.
So this is how they used to do it back in the day. They didn't have reverbs, right? So they used to send the audio into the echo chamber and then mic the end of the chamber. And then, of course, traveling through that distance, you would get the reverb, the ambience. And then you could mix it into the orchestra. And, of course, you guys remember back in the 50s, you know, Motown would have them in the stairwells. And that those beautiful sounding stairwells were natural reverb. So you kind of use what you have, right? Yeah.
Of course, we don't know what happened in the 50s.
Maybe we have an idea.
Well, maybe you listen to some Motown and go, how did it sound like that? They didn't have reverb in those days. They had stairwells in those days.
I actually do have a friend that, he's not a musician, but he's a big old techie nerd.
Mm-hmm.
And he ironically took shop. He's graduated now through high school, so mm-hmm. a very hands-on, you know, class for such a computer-based person. But he actually spent his last year making a booth.
Oh, cool.
A sound booth.
Yeah, that's great. Sorry.
To start recording.
Fantastic. So that's a great idea.
He put his knowledge to use.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
That's smart.
And then I have to go back and make a call back. You've been talking about all the sounds that they are now capturing. When you were talking about all the samples that are in a computer now, I flash back and you always think of these movies that are putting DNA samples and calling it the Noah's Ark, and this is the Noah's Ark of music. Because you have all the different samples that you're using.
It's sort of endless. Well, you know what's interesting? Sound design is something that we do at the school where I teach. I teach at this place called Art Center College of Design. It has a film department. And the students that I have are basically aspiring directors and editors. They're filmmakers. But what's interesting is a lot of times, you know, the filmmakers, the last thing they always think about, frankly, is audio. And don't they know the golden rule, the George Lucas rule, which is, wait a minute, you've made this 4K video that looks amazing, it's all colored, and it's amazing, and yet the audio is terrible. And guess what? People are going to think it's terrible.
Yeah.
So I tell them, look, you can't mess that up. You've got to get the audio right, you know? Mm-hmm. So we go, and sound design, we were talking about, you know, ADR, or you see the guys that do the sound effects and being able to create your own. And one of the things that I'm also interested in, and at some point you might find interesting, is synthesizers and being able to create sounds with basically raw synthesis, where you take, you know, sawtooth and sine waves, and we won't go into the details of this, but basically just simple reproduction of sound waves and be able to manipulate them and create filters and envelopes to be able to create unique sounds. And that's, think about a lot of the early films, especially science fiction films, that's all about sound design, taking synthesizers. And you can even buy them on your Android and iPhone. You can actually load and buy synthesizers mm-hmm. and create your own sounds.
Well, we're going to take another short break and do a sample of Matt's actual score that he did for what is called The Dream of a Resident Tourist. And I assume that's for L.A. Mm-hmm. That seems what the spotlight is in the video. You'll have the overlay with the voiceovers, but what you'll be concentrating on is the musical background, the instrumentals. So here we go with Matt's original score.
I'd like to welcome you on board of flight 797 this morning on into Los Angeles.
I became your tourist the moment I glimpsed at you from the sky. You were a shining light, a dazzling grid of perfectly lined streets. When your colorful light towers greeted me, I knew where I had to live. I live in your midst, somewhere between nature and man. I walk amongst your buildings and trees, between the hills and the sun that sets in your ocean. It's funny how something so real can resemble something that I have seen in dreams. From your decks, my heart swelled at the sight that inspired countless dreamers. Across the street, I watched dreams lived out in one of your film premieres. Here, I walked among the stars and was surprised to see Michael and Marilyn meet as sparks flew between them. Los Angeles, I love how you strike a balance between man, technology, and nature. Every week,
As I said, you were concentrating on the background music, the score for the, I assume it was a commercial or just a promotional piece.
You know what? It's interesting. I met this young filmmaker at a meeting for a post-production group, and essentially he was entering into this competition to create something for tourists in Los Angeles. He thought, hey, there was a competition, so he shot the film and he gave it to me and I scored it, and actually it won for this competition, which was kind of cool. So he actually, what's interesting, he got a package to go do some post work at a facility. That was sort of the reward for winning. So it was kind of fun.
And you kind of got the feeling again of, before we said with the Sherlock Holmes, you felt the emotion.
Yeah.
But even with the words overlaying on top of the music, you felt the emotion behind it as well. And it was almost
a relaxing
feel. And then at the beginning, I noticed, I don't know if it's staccato, whether you were kind of ring dropping steps.
Yeah,
kinda.
Exactly. A little.
And I noticed, I don't know if it's intentional or not, but there was like traffic going by and stuff. So I felt like, you know, that fit with the video. You don't get to see that, of course, we're audio, but I was like, you know, you tied that in, and it was throughout the rest of the song as well when you go through it, but that itself was kind of neat how it tied in. I don't know if that was intentional or that just how I interpreted it, and I enjoyed it, but that was kind of neat to see that kind of interfacing. And
well, yeah. And it's another stimulant to help someone pay attention, mm-hmm. because it's a spoken word piece, you know, and
right.
If it's just straight word, a lot of people aren't very into it, or they struggle with it. Like with audiobooks, I can't pay attention to save my life. You know, I'd zone out and focus on something else, probably think of a song right. or something. But having music under it really keeps the brain's drive going and keeps the interest. And to me, it highlights the important parts as well. You know, even if it's subconsciously, it's indicating the brain, hey, pay attention to that. Something happened there. It's more sciencey, psychological.
The psychological
thing.
Right, trying to sort of guide someone through the piece and keep the interest and sort of match the energy on screen and sort of, it's interesting. You know, and what's interesting about film scoring in general is sometimes we watch a film and we just sort of take advantage of the music and we just take for granted that it fits so seamlessly. But the reality is that when a composer gets hired to film to score something, they're told, okay, it's called spotting the film. They'd say, okay, at 2 minutes and 31 seconds and 10 frames, we want a piece of music to last 49 seconds. Now, what's interesting is every hit point that happens, whether it's a punch, something that happens, any kind of movement that the composer has to catch, he's having to basically match. He has to create basically a conductor track inside the program that matches those movements. So if you watch, let's say Danny Elfman is an example, scoring a scene from an Alice in Wonderland or something like that. Danny is constantly changing meters and tempos in order to get those things to happen. So you're listening to the music and he's going from 5-4 to 7-8, 3-4, 4-4. He's slowing down and he's hitting the picture so seamlessly. And those guys just do it intuitively. They're very good at that.
That's one of my favorite. It's a game I play with myself that I don't tell people about because it's nerdy and dumb. But when listening or watching a show or a movie, I always have an ear on the music, at least one ear, and I try to pick out the meter, and if it's in four, you know, I'll count it in four, and then I'll count it in two for the hell of it, and then I'll,
that's great,
you know,
that's great,
and see if I can match it. So
that's fantastic.
I know, but,
or, you know, it's interesting, like, sometimes, here's one other thing, like, if there's free time, right? Because let's say you're conducting in front of an orchestra, and now here's the interesting thing, the orchestra's playing, right, and they're reading the music, and they've got headphones on, they're listening to click oftentimes, right, a click track. Well, here's the interesting thing, the conductor's watching a big screen in the back of the room with a visual, and there's something called a streamer. Basically, a streamer is this big mark that crosses the screen, and when it gets to the edge of the screen, that's a downbeat. So The musicians are playing. They're playing. He's telling them, hold. So he sees the streamer, and then there's the downbeat. And as we're watching the film, we're kind of thinking, how do they know the conductor's watching the streamer and brings them in? And the musicians are waiting and holding. They're kind of big, you know.
Well, it helps, too, since the players can't see it. So they have the anticipation of, oh.
And exactly. There's a fermata. He's holding it. Brings them in. It's great.
I have to mention, April did get some foot stomps when she directed her honor choir up in Nebraska.
Oh, my gosh. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
For the music nerds, they'll know what the foot stomps are.
Well, I conducted...
What's a foot stomp?
A foot stomp. I mean, it's... I don't know how many nerds would know it, but so if you're practicing, or you know, and maybe there's an oboe solo, and they do it particularly well that time, you can't hear it through the mic, but you stomp your feet because you have an instrument in your hand. You're not going to put it down or awkwardly hold it to clap. Right. So you kind of stomp the floor. That's when you know you've made it.
Okay.
He's in Southwest Kansas. But, I directed my church choir this whole past season for my senior year. But my big thing is band and instrumental music. I remember... doing honor band my first year, my freshman, and I went into the choir. I figured, oh, I'll do choir band. But I noticed during the choir, because you could hear kind of the band practicing off in the distance, and I'd be like, what are they doing over there? Oh man, what's that clarinet part sound like? That trumpet part, so good. So that's when I figured out, I'll just stick with the instruments. But I went up to Nebraska for an honor band. I got in. And the conductor actually asked us to come up and conduct a piece, and I got up, and it was great.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, so it is a rush. You know,
you have a very visual sense about music, which I think it just seems like the way that you think about film scores and, you know, being a player and a conductor. And are you writing as well these days?
But I do. My grandma introduced me to a Synsony, a program that is that what it is?
I was thinking it was something similar to Sibelius, but
Sibelius.
Yeah, that you can write on. So I'm going to start. Yeah,
that would be perfect for you.
Yeah, I mean, I can tap away whatever.
Do you have some basic piano skills to be able to play chords and things? Fantastic.
Yeah,
good.
A bit, so.
And she knows how to let people know if they're wrong. So she can say,
"What sounds to me
in
like
a nice
wrong.
Way.
Yeah, if you had, you know, Sibelius has sounds that come with it, and so like you said, once you pick the instruments that you want, you know, whatever notes you play in, you know, they'll play back, and so you can start building your own scores.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I wanted you to come in was because we are in the genres we are, we're kind of all over the place. We have, but I enjoy the music. April enjoys the music, but. Whether you believe it or not, you know, Jacob and Jonathan and Logan Logan's a little bit more versed, but Jacob and Jonathan, they've kind of mentioned they're not as well versed, but they're hearing all this stuff, and even I didn't know what all went on behind the scenes.
It's not just recording.
Right. So it's, you know, I didn't realize the mixing was all that involved when you were adding also to make things sound more full, I guess you would say.
Right.
So that was why I wanted to, and we have... about a couple of PR companies that are using us for indie artists, and that's one of the reasons why we also want to have you on, because, you know, one of the big things with musicians is the mixing part of it.
Sure.
And especially if they are indie, like we said, they might be doing it on their own. So
right.
So
true.
That's another reason why we were glad to have you agree to come in this evening.
Well, if you wanted to send me anything to listen to, I mean, for an extra set of ears, you know, sometimes I'll bounce something off a friend if I'm mixing. I'll just say, hey, you know, give me a listen to this. Yeah. But
that'd be April's area.
Yeah,
I don't sing. It's not me that's doing the recording. The sound stuff I have fun with, but that's very low key. Definitely. One of the things, you mentioned some of the other artists that are coming on. April and I, and I don't know how much the other guys are, we haven't really talked about soundtracks that much, but I'm a big soundtrack fan. Most of the time, I will enjoy buying it. I don't listen to it a whole lot because the other part of the family doesn't really enjoy it. So I get it in when I can. So, and just some of the artists that you've been mentioning, you know, hearing the names rattled off, you know, Danny Elfman, Goldsmith,
Hans, and some of those guys.
Right, it's like, sure. It's kind of fun to hear this. And, of course, going back to even the older ones, Mancini.
Sure.
You know, I remember Mancini with, what was the Safari one with John Wayne? Hatari.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The Pink Panther and stuff right. like that. So.
Well, Mancini was fantastic. Yeah, absolutely.
So,
Jerry Goldsmith, yeah.
Music is going on.
So you can see I'm kind of all over the place. So I guess that's good that I'm a librarian, so mm-hmm. I have multiple interests. One of the things I want to invite people, we're kind of running up on our time because we have so much we can record. And unless you're wanting to go over, we can talk more about just this and that.
Sure.
But the actual website is mattlapointe.com. There's one section that we're going to kind of skip. I was going to play, but I think we'll let the listeners of the show go and check it out. But some of the things that I'll kind of have fun with, there's a film and TV songs that Matt has on there, some samples of, that goes through some of the songs that sound, can tell you where I was kind of going to have you go through them with us. But there's a lot of Disney songs in there. You've done the Cheetah Girls movie. You've done Teen Beach. Some of the other things that are done. Mm-hmm. You've done the Lego movies. You have trailers that you've worked on. Then there was one area where when I was doing this, and I don't want to mean any offense or anything, but it just popped into my head, and I was just like, okay, do we have a Charlie Harper in the room? Because you're working on the commercials and everything like that. Charlie Harper from Two and a Half Men working on the commercials.
That's funny. Yeah, so, exactly. Did you catch the Barbie stuff at all?
Yes, I did.
Isn't that fun? You know,
so that was kind of fun because, as you can tell, I'm a toy collector. If anybody hasn't seen my office, come by, you'll see.
I think there was something for the Hot Wheels.
Hot Wheels was on
Hot
there.
Hot Wheels. So. That's actually kind of a nice cue. It's like real heavy and kind of, you know, it's kind of rocking cue. It's like kids are like, yeah, I want my Hot Wheel cars. You know what's fun about the Mattel? Let me give you 2 seconds just for fun on the Mattel. And by the way, don't feel stressed with time. We can go whatever. We can go longer. As long as I'm not boring your audience.
No.
If you want, you can stick around and try and go for a Zootopia or...
Did you guys watch that last night?
Oh yes.
I've watched Zootopia 6 times now.
Wow.
And Sweeney Todd is one of my favorite musicals, so I've watched that countless times.
That's the Johnny Depp one, right? The new one. Fantastic.
The Sweeney Todd was quite entertaining for us because we got to watch Sweeney Todd while also getting a live performance.
Featuring Brookman.
She's doing all the lines, and you're watching at the same time.
Right. Yeah. Pretty much.
She did the opening sequence. I was doing the dialogue, too, and I was like, you going to do that the whole way? No, I'll suppress it. But in my head, yes.
See, we said we didn't mind it too much.
And when the time comes that we do Les Miserables, I will pay you back, and I will be happily joined.
Right. Are you the Hugh Jackman character?
Oh, man.
No, I prefer, I prefer Javert as opposed to Jean Valjean.
Same.
But, I see.
I like Jean Valjean, but I think Javert is the more dynamic character just because of all the things that he goes through.
To me, Stars is the best song for the whole thing. Even though it's such a small number, it's like,
beautiful.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Just beautiful.
Sidetracked so hard.
That's
there.
Great.
No, I saw something. I actually knew it. I understood.
Like, I can talk.
I know what we're doing.
Well, all I was going to say about the Barbie thing real quick is that what's interesting is this guy I work for named Brian Banks, who has big accounts like Mattel, right, mm-hmm. who does Barbie. He writes these really catchy tunes, and then he's kind of like, I'd say maybe a half a dozen different Barbie personalities. Like he's got the sort of real R&B Barbie, the real sweet Disney Barbie, the rock and roll Barbie, you know, depending on what they're selling, right? And so he'll bring in these different women that sing and have these great voices. And then what's fun is we used to record them there and then layer their voices and then mix them. And it was such a nice fast turnaround, right? And he had that. He made a lot of money working for these companies, and it was really fun. While it lasted, we were working on a lot of those.
So the main thing is, if you're a magician, yeah, if you're a musician and you're headed out to L.A., you really want to be diversified. You're going to be more marketable that way.
Here's an interesting thing, and we were talked about this yesterday. Everything that you do that's a skill is a bonus. Everything you do. So, like you said, playing clarinet, writing, singing, orchestrating, conducting, right? The computer stuff that you know, everything, recording. And so, and I was thinking, when I was, here's an interesting thing, a little background. I'm living in Lawrence, Kansas, right? Mm-hmm. I'd finished KU. I had gotten my degree. And I decided, you know, I wasn't going to, quote unquote, get a real job. So what I ended up doing in Lawrence was just like playing in bands and recording. Till like my late 20s, I was just basically experimenting, recording, and doing all these different things, right? And I always sort of think of it metaphorically as like this bag, right? And you're putting all these different skills and all these experimental things you've tried all through your youth, the ideas you've written, sketches, little things. Believe it or not, you're going to be drawing on that for the rest of your life. Like, you'll be 35 years old living in, you know, San Francisco or somewhere, right? Who knows where you'll be, right? And someone will say, hey, I want you to write this thing. And you'll go, I wrote, when I was like 21, I wrote this cool piece. And so I'm saying, right now when you're young and you've got, you know, you don't have a lot of responsibilities, like, now is the time that you write all these things and do all these experimentations, whatever field you're in. It doesn't have to be music, right? Mm-hmm. And then you'll have that to draw from for the rest of your career.
Okay, cool. I think we'll leave out on that one. Matt, we definitely had fun visiting with you tonight. Thank you for coming in.
Well, I had a blast. Thank you, guys.
It's been fun. Us music nerds are having fun here. So I enjoyed it. We hope everybody out there has also been enjoying listening to us. And again, thank you very much for doing this. I know it was a time away from your schedule, from family, so thank you again.
No, thank you.
We hope you everybody's had fun out there listening to us. We've had fun. We'll catch everybody on the flip side.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
See ya.
And all your time is filled with joy. You give thanks for your life. Don't forget it or regret it. All the time will pass you by. Got to use it, don't abuse it. Afraid to fly, 'cause everyone thinks you can't do it. Break free of all your chains with love. Rescue them from their lives. Just forgive them, don't relive them. All the pain will multiply. Got to choose it or you lose it.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.